you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. So it's a pleasure for me to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak to the conference. And today I want to speak to you primarily as a researcher who has been involved with the successful invention of new medicines for HIV, and also as a collaborator, someone who's involved in collaboration with scientists in the developing world and helping those organizations to begin to put in place the infrastructures that are necessary to deliver some of the innovations that we've been hearing about this morning. Now, I'm going to focus in the next 20 minutes on three areas. I'm going to spend time, first of all, giving you a little bit of a backdrop to the cost and complexity of innovation in drug discovery. And I'd like you to appreciate this because it's important to understand the substantial challenges, scientific challenges, that drug discovery faces. Dr. Chan emphasized two points that smart drug design and diagnostic design can overcome infrastructural limitations. I want to give you an indication of the degree of challenge that is required in meeting those requirements. This really is right at the forefront of research challenges in drug discovery. After that, I want to move on and tell you a little bit about attrition, failure in the drug discovery process, and its relationship to disease, and the need for an IP framework to drive the necessary diversity of approach which is required to ensure that despite that failure in the process, we still have successful outcomes. And then I'm going to finish telling you a little bit about the value of IP and how it can be the framework for collaboration in the development of new medicines, particularly in the areas that we've heard mentioned already this morning. So let's make a start. Actually, these are the wrong slides, but I will talk to them nevertheless. Taking a look at the R&D process summary, most of the activity that I am involved with is in the blue boxes at the beginning of the process, drug discovery and preclinical research, a time at which we were looking at many thousands of compounds, many hundreds of different projects. And during that point in time, we make two very important decisions. We discover the right target. The target that we're going to choose is the means for treating a particular disease, and then we go on to invent the right molecule. And I want to stress that the point at which invention of the molecule occurs is the first point at which intellectual property can be filed. Typically, we will file somewhere in the region of 2 years after that point. And the point that I'd like to stress here is that at that filing point, there is still between 10 and 12 years left before the entity that we've invented becomes commercialized. Intellectual property is absolutely essential from a researcher's point of view because it allows the disclosure of that invention many years before the commercial product is available. Without that framework, secrecy would mean that medical research would be held back by that period of time that I referred to, 10 to 12 years. So that's my first point on the necessity of intellectual property to me as a researcher. The framework for protected publication allows the disclosure of invention up to 10 years before it would naturally occur were that system not in place. The other thing that I'd like to stress, as you've heard, is that as we have increasing challenges associated with the end products that we must produce in order to ensure safety and convenience of use. And again, I would mention the point that Dr. Chan made about the importance of convenient dosing regimens. All of these increasing requirements push up the cost of drug research. And you see that the most recent estimates for this are in the region of $1.3 billion to successfully develop one new drug. I don't have a slide, but it's also when the analysis was last conducted at a breakpoint of about $1 billion, only 3 in 10 of approved drugs recover those investments in cost. So I want to leave you with the thought that this is a very expensive process. It's also reflected in the fact that the pharmaceutical industry is the largest internal investor in research and development of a large number of technology-driven industries, at 17.5% of annual revenues. So our previous speaker mentioned both the cost and value to countries associated with that investment and the need within a patent system to balance the benefit to population over the cost of research. Now, this slide is a relatively detailed one, but I'm going to walk you through it because it's important. This is a slide looking at the impact of new medicines on the cost of HIV treatment. On the left-hand side graph, you will see the change in the number of AIDS deaths per 100,000 members of the population over a period of time. From 1980 onwards, you see as the disease became more prevalent, death rates rose. In 1996, with the introduction of antiretroviral therapy, death rates fell. I'd also then point you to the next graph on the right-hand side, which looks at the differential spending to manage that disease prior to and then after the introduction of antiretroviral therapy. So you can see, although the distribution of costs changes, the overall cost diminishes. I think this is a fantastic illustration of the success of a patent regime that allows the benefit and cost balance that the previous speaker mentioned. So that's a little bit of economics. I'm not an economist, I'm a researcher. What I want to do now is tell you a little bit about how I see the role of intellectual property helping the discovery and innovation of new medicines. As I mentioned previously, we make two key decisions at the beginning of the process of invention. That is to discover the right target, a process which is being and will continue to be massively enabled by our better understanding of the genetic basis of disease. And then we invent the right molecule, a process that I will now go on, I hope to describe, is essential to have protected in the context of patents because it supports a very important element of our process around diversity. I want to just underpin, though, in this next few minutes, that where the money, the capital investment that I mentioned in the first section of the slide goes, and I also want you to bear in mind that these infrastructural investments are things that can become the context of effective collaboration. So that will be something that I'll mention in the final part of my presentation to emphasize that massive capital investment is something we can then use in collaboration with developing world or countries and researchers in those countries to help them do a better job of discovering new medicines. I'm going to give you examples from HIV, just two, and before you start worrying about the fact that you're going to get half an hour of detailed science, I'm not going to do that to you. I'm simply going to mention that I'm going to talk about two different approaches to HIV, one new one based on the blocking the receptor by which the virus enters T cells. So in other words, you can think about that as something which locks the door and prevents the entry of HIV into your cells. And the other one, the importance of a technical approach called structural drug design in the development of new generations of non-nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors, which are an important established class of agents to treat HIV. So the first approach is an approach which is underpinned in a genetic validation. Again, the important thing here is simply that this is a brand new approach. We heard earlier from Dr. Chan the importance of overcoming resistance, and new approaches like this are absolutely essential if we're going to deliver medicines against pathogens that are readily change and therefore develop resistance. Because it was a new approach, we had no chemical starting point. And in order to find that chemical starting point, we had to conduct a high-throughput screen. At the time at which this program began, we tested 1 million compounds just to find the starting point. We then went on and made 1,000 more compounds over a period of 3 years to convert that starting point from a relatively weak compound into one that had the properties necessary to become a medicine that had the characteristics that Dr. Chan mentioned. The investment required to support those activities, simply the activity of searching 1 million compounds, runs itself into many tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars if you consider the capital investment in the compound collection necessary to derive this starting point. So this represents massive technical investment, even simply the logistics of storing the compound samples and making sure that they don't get mixed up as you use them is a massively technical operation. The robot you can see on the right-hand side is how we go about doing that. This is a substantial infrastructural investment that large pharma can bring to aid collaboration, and I'll mention that in on the last few slides of my presentation. In addition to that aspect, in the other program that I mentioned, the non-nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitor program, we're able to use a technique known as X-ray crystallography, which essentially allows us to take photographs of the protein targets that we're interested in and discover how small molecules bind to those proteins. And this is an example of the very small to the very large, and it covers a range of skills from molecular biology that is required in the top left-hand side to construct organisms capable of producing the proteins that we need to do our work, all the way through to massive physics. And the picture on the bottom right-hand side is the synchrotron center in CERN, which we use to obtain the photographs, if you like, of these protein interactions. So again, massive technical investment and expertise required to underpin essentially producing this, which is the picture of a small molecule binding to a protein, which is important in helping us as researchers to design new medicines that bind to those proteins and therefore overcome resistance. Now, the key point that I want to make here is that intellectual property supports that investment through rewarding innovation. As I've mentioned previously, these are both highly technical and costly operations, but more importantly, knowledge and experience are key to leading the advance of best scientific practice. And that knowledge and experience is communicated earlier than it would do under normal circumstances because of a patent infrastructure that allows publication. It's essential. It also furnishes a fundamental basis for collaboration, which I'll talk about in the next few slides. Another point that I want to raise is that despite that technical investment, the complexities of what we do mean that we will fail. And in particular, we fail at the moment and to a large extent around about phase two. If you draw your attention to the collection of bars in the left-hand side of the graph, the ones that are at the lowest success, they refer to the phase two process. And the point I want to make on this slide, which comes from a review written by Ismail Kohler, is that phase two success is completely agnostic to the nature of the disease. And so as we approach new diseases through collaboration, the challenges that you've heard about this morning, there is no basis to expect that we will be any different to those cases that we've already seen in the past. So what is it about IP that helps overcome that attrition? To a large extent, that attrition is driven by have we made the right choice in the first instance of the disease that we target, but also have we chosen the right molecule? And I've selected here two examples of, I hope that what you can deduce from the structures, I know you're not chemists, is that they're all very different. On the left-hand side, CCR5 antagonists, Maraviroc is the compound that I was lucky enough to be an inventor of. It is the only example of a successfully licensed CCR5 antagonist, despite the fact that tens of organizations have been addressing that target over the period of the last 20 years. On the other side, we have the DPP-4 inhibitors. These are anti-diabetic drugs. There is one compound launched, two if you include the Novartis compound, which is currently also undergoing evaluation. This is an area where the emerging profile of those compounds, particularly with regard to cardiovascular side effects, will ultimately end up distinguishing them. The point I'm making is that an IP framework which protects chemical identity, which establishes a genus of protected compounds, drives researchers into new areas of chemical space and produces the diversity that is essential and is ultimately rewarded at the end of the process because it allows us to overcome unknown attrition risks. So as a researcher, that's a subtle part of IP that I think is often missed but is critically important. And I want to move on and talk about, in the last section of my presentation, simply on collaboration. And the point I want to make is that this is about playing to the strengths of all players involved. At the moment, as you can see from this slide, R&D funding sources come from both industry and government. The important thing about those R&D funding sources, though, is that they realize very different purposes. On the left-hand side, you can see that the vast majority of public investment in the past has been successful in uncovering the key enabling discovery. When it comes down to the synthesis of compounds, the design of those molecules that will become medicines, the vast majority of the investment and skill then lies in the private sector. And so the solution to the development of effective medicines for neglected diseases, in my opinion, arises through collaboration. I'm going to tell you about two collaborations that we have. The basic message from both of these is essentially the same, and it's that collaboration works well when it seeks to exploit the individual skills and advantages of each partner, and in doing so, avoids expensive duplication of resources. The first one is a collaboration between the WHO and Pfizer through the Tropical Diseases Research Network. You can see the members of the collaboration on this slide here, and we are in Pfizer contributing both compounds and drug discovery expertise to help the centers mentioned in Basel and Egypt, for example, who are experts in the pathogen screening, begin to identify new starting points for medicines. The collaboration itself is at the moment at the point of screening. As I say, the key thing for this slide is that Pfizer is providing the resources in compounds. That compound collection that I mentioned in the earlier instance, we're not screening millions of compounds. The technical capability to do that in the screening centers doesn't exist. So what we're doing is choosing compounds that we feel are most likely to be the ones that will address the targets in question. Another important achievement associated with this particular endeavor is the education of researchers. My department in Sandridge has hosted a number of chemistry fellows. We have published papers as a result of that scientific activity. And in addition to that, I myself now spend time in Cape Town University as a member and chair of their scientific advisory board for drug discovery. I'm going to finish with just another example, which is an MMV Pfizer collaboration. And again, the same principles operate here. The Pfizer compound library is made available for screening. We're providing access to those highly capitally intensive activities. And to give you an indication of that, recently the NIH published a summary paper on their activities in drug development, an initiative known as PubChem. That has required an investment of $300 million and so far has produced 40 tools, not medicines, simple research tools. $300 million to produce 40 research tools. We must be able to do better than that, and the solution is through effective collaboration. The importance of IP in that collaboration, I think, is also should not be missed. The reason we are able to share compounds and our compound collection with others and then help in the development of those compounds and their design through to new medicines is because we have a fundamentally manageable system in which we can understand where intellectual property ownership lies and what further risks exist to both organizations as a consequence of the development of that, of the science around that intellectual property. Without such a framework, this type of collaboration would become much more difficult. I've mentioned two examples. Paul Herling from Novartis has done a fantastic job of collecting, if you like, the complete portfolio of neglected disease research. I've included it on this slide along with the reference to Paul's paper if you're interested and you would like more information. There are two points to be made on this slide before I finish. They are that, as you can see, that it is necessary to have a portfolio approach to this particular problem. If you remember back to the attrition statistics that I mentioned, it is simply not possible to deliver success without a portfolio because of the fact that failure will occur. In addition to that, it's important to have an infrastructure to manage that portfolio. I think this, for me, is critically where international cooperation and cooperation between agencies is so critically important. It's only at that level that you begin to bring together a breadth of portfolio like this. And then finally, I think a point that I will stress but I have no expertise in is as we begin to identify new development candidates, the key issue that remains is the cost of phase three trials. Paul has made a proposal in terms of a fund to support these trials that is called FRIND. Again, you will find details on that in the reference that I've included. So I will finish there. I hope that you've taken from my presentation that R&D is long and complex and costly. However, that cost is rewarded both in terms of improvement of quality of life and in the broader economic sense, as I've shown you in the case for HIV. As a researcher, I think IP is essential to ensure investment in technology and drive diversity and speed in the process. Competitiveness, because you're aware of other patents, drives speed in that process. Collaboration is the solution to the development of medicines for neglected diseases, and it's better when it uses the combined resources of all organizations as a potential solution, and it does not duplicate especially expensive capital resources. I think finally, from my point of view, what needs more work also is understanding the transition between pre-competitive and competitive activities so that we can continue to use this essential framework to support the transfer of knowledge, to support collaboration, and at the same time underpin the reward for innovation that will be essential whether the research is conducted in the US, the UK, or in South Africa. I hope I haven't confused you or bored you with too much science, and I'll finish there and thank you for your attention.